Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host, and this is already weekend 19 approaching. Stay tuned to hear Don Del Greco, the ranger and park manager of Maplewood State Park, speak about the Minnesota DNR, his career, wildlife, many animals, and of course, insights about Maplewood State Park, a real asset here in Ottawa County for us. If you haven't been there ever, it's beautiful. We go there regularly. So thanks for tuning in to hear this. And also check out our daily updated website, lakelifeweekend.com, with lots more events, stories, road trips, destinations. We are adding recipes and all kinds of details about Lakes Country. Thank you for using this. And yeah, before we go into the interview, I also want to say thank you to our sponsor at Ease Dock and Lift, just east of Detroit Lakes there, with a brand new facility and many docks and lifts waiting for you. Go in and speak to Mike or John if you are considering to upgrade or purchase your first system for your lake home. They are a great asset as well, just east of Detroit Lakes before Frazee there on Highway 10. So I don't want to keep this much longer. Enjoy Lakes Country, get out and explore. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy this episode with Don Del Greco. You have a wonderful weekend ahead. Well, hello, welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Don Del Greco, the park manager of Maplewood State Park. Welcome, Don.
Thank you very much, Dirk. It's a joy to be with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And I pulled you out of the park in the midst of spring and the most beautiful times, as you mentioned earlier, the phenomena of nature.
Yes.
But before we talk about the park and a little bit more detail on how large it is and how challenging it is to manage a big, big piece of property like that. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. You are a Minnesota native, and where did you go to school? Where did you grow up? How did you get connected to Minnesota wildlife and your role today?
Well, thank you again for inviting me in this beautiful spring day. A little background for myself. I was born up on the Iron Range of northeast Minnesota. Right on the edge of the Boundary Waters and in a little town on the Iron Range, Buell, Minnesota. And from those early beginnings, my father, our family loved nature, and my father would spend time with me following the pursuits of a young boy pursuing butterflies. If you can imagine, that is the trigger, that is the draw that I found captivated me, inspired me, drew me into nature appreciation as a youthful boy, a 3 and 4 year old chasing butterflies. So that little micro world of insects and led me into a greater appreciation for the wonders of this beautiful world. Butterflies took me on a journey to pursue biology, to go to school, ultimately St. Cloud State University, where I studied entomology, studied biology, studied art. I also am blessed to enjoy the beauty of watercolor and photography. So those two parallel tracks of particular interest led me into deep appreciations of nature and a desire to communicate about, tell the stories of how beautiful Minnesota is and how beautiful this world is and the natural connections that we all have. So that led me into a career in natural resources. I've been blessed to work for 33 years in the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Really?
Yes, started way up in International Falls working with fisheries crews in the interior waters of Voyageurs National Park. And from there, I worked my way into the southeast corner of the state, the far end of the state, into the limestone blufflands and crystal clear spring-fed streams of southeast Minnesota. And it was like walking into a whole new world. The beautiful diversity of Minnesota is captured just from corner to corner, from east to west, north to south. The diversity of this state is unbelievable. The biomes that meet here, the natural elements, the natural landscapes here in Minnesota are very diverse. So Southeast Minnesota is where I spent early career working with fisheries, moved into parks and trails at beautiful Forestville State Park, spent some time at a seminary. I went to pursue pastoral pursuits and found the blessing of a beautiful wife, and we have traveled through Southeast Minnesota serving small rural churches, and then working our way up into the northeastern part of the state, kind of coming home after spending time in the deep south, and then ending up in the
deep south of Minnesota.
Deep south of Minnesota, banana belt to Minnesota. One of the most diverse corners of the state, by the way.
We don't have bananas there, do we?
No, we don't.
No, okay.
But a remarkable corner of the state, but worked our way kind of back to the north a little bit, raised our family, our young sons at the time, hiking trails, connecting with nature, with our children, passing on that love for nature and those connections that are so, that Minnesotans hold so close to their hearts.
That's true.
And so, yeah, ended up in the Kettle River area with Banning State Park, Moose Lake State Park, Agaton Geological Interpretive Center there was just coming into view, and that's a story of the wondrous geological stories of Minnesota. So spent a number of years there really pursuing geological stories of the Moose Lake area and all through Minnesota. And then here about 8 years ago, ended up here in the northwestern corner of the state in a place called Maplewood.
Wow.
And of all the places in the state, there's remarkable beauty everywhere and wonderful natural history stories. Maplewood has a special place. It's unique in this lake country. There's geological stories, there's natural features. We're on the edge of two biomes. Maplewood is a blend of prairie and hardwood forest. And if you can even mix in the beautiful crystal clear blue lakes that are in this part of the world and these magnificent rolling topography and hills, this is what has captivated people for thousands of years. The native peoples loved this area, lived in this area. The pioneers came here and found great wonder and pursuit for settling parts of this land. And then even to this day, it's still a captivating place. And I love to talk about how Maplewood is recalled by early settlers and early peoples, and the native peoples called it the place of the rustling leaves. And thus the stories of maples growing on these glacial hills has a really strong presence for people to enjoy in every season of the year. And so that's kind of how I ended up out here. But it's been a wonderful journey, and my dear family has followed me through those processes, and we have just loved and enjoyed every corner of the state. There's a beauty and a natural history story for everybody to learn.
Yeah, I'm scared to interrupt you. It's amazing what an asset you are. You have been really all over Minnesota. I mean, I could probably make a two-hour program out of this, asking you about each of the parks. Fascinating, and you're very passionate. And in fact, actually, I met you probably 4 years ago on my first visit to Maplewood State Park when I bought my little ticket to enter the gate. So I do remember you already, but you don't remember me, which is fine. You have probably thousands of guests. But I can feel and I hear you have a beautiful connection, and I'm really glad you're here. I can
ask
a lot of questions. So yes. You came to Maplewood State Park 8 years ago already, and you are the park manager. It's that kind of like the career ending, like you made your way up to a park manager. I think that's a very big role, correct?
It's a wonderful role. It's a humbling role. It's a privilege and a joy to serve in any of the places that we've had the opportunity to serve in. And I consider it a service. State parks really are outstanding places to introduce people to the wonders of nature. And, you know, part of our vision is to create unforgettable outdoor experiences in the parks, the trails, the waterways, lakes, rivers of across Minnesota, and to create those experiences for families, for individuals who are looking to connect and learn about nature and to be inspired by what is all around us. And on every given day, every single season is a tremendous gift. In Minnesota, we're fortunate to have those four seasons. Sometimes they last longer than other years. Like we're right now, everybody's chomping on the bit to come to the to the beauty of outdoors. Cabin fever has set in, but signs of spring are everywhere. The park is unfolding right now, getting ready to roll out that red carpet, if you will, for welcoming people back this summer. We have wonderful winter visitors, but spring is, there's anticipation, and I call it a celebration of life, a celebration of the beauties of this wonderful world. And that's the privilege of being a park manager, and my role is to help enable our staff, prepare for those customers, to help enable folks to connect, to welcome them with hospitality, but then to let folks come and explore and learn ways they can interact with nature. And that's what State Parks and Trails do extremely well. We've been doing, had the privilege of a 125-year rich history of preserving natural resources for future generations so people can be inspired.
Okay, so I have so many questions, and I don't even know where to start. You just mentioned, I want to go back to rustling leaves.
Oh, yeah.
I want to, first, because I'm a foreigner, what does rustling leaves
mean? Oh, rustling, to me, the word rustling, and the way it's been described in some literature that I've read, it's the movement of leaves up in the top of the treetops.
Sure.
And through the branches, it's that... when a wind blows, and a soft wind, whether it's soft or a gentle wind, or if it's a strong gusting wind, leaves interact with each other up on those branches. You know, a large maple tree might have 150,000 leaves or more, and those are all photosynthetic factories that are creating, you know, manufacturing food for the tree. And in that rustling of the leaf, that's something that people from the past have hearkened to. If you sit on the top of a hill in Maplewood, the other morning I got up well before sunrise just to perch myself on one of those high hills in the park and watch the sun come up. There was not a single breeze, and of course there's no leaves on the tree right now. That's what maple syrup and the spring season is all about, this celebration of the earth coming, the trees, the forest, the prairies coming back to life, if you will, as the days get longer, the warmth of the sun, all of those things trigger the beginning of spring in Minnesota. And because we have such interesting, sometimes lingering winters, we truly appreciate the warm-up and the coming of spring in a way that's really, truly is a celebration. I think we all feel that way this year.
Yep. So let's start from the outside and zoom in then a little bit. You just mentioned 125 years. Did I hear that correctly? That's the State Parks anniversary?
State Parks, Minnesota Parks and Trails Division, if you will, part of the larger Department of Natural Resources. You know, we've been in that role for a little over 125 years. We had 125 anniversary a couple of years ago.
And how long has Maplewood State Park been a state park? That
1963, and that's kind of neat to see. There were our original parks were way back. Itasca was our first park, of course, and that's we often think of
the
that.
Very first,
the very first state park. Itasca and Interstate State Park came into the system about the same time, but Itasca is actually credited, you know, of course, being the source of the Mississippi River, magnificent pines, all those preservation and rich history there. But there, that's our beginning of our operations in preserving natural resources.
And then Maplewood State Park since 1967.
1963 is when we were established. And those high hills were recognized by people with great vision that had a love for these hills and these valleys and these prairies. The same things that hearkened to the ancient peoples that lived here, the pioneers that settled here, that wonder, that beauty, that opportunity to be in this landscape captured a lot of folks' attention. And in 1963, those folks put
together. How many acres is it? How many acres and how many trails? And let's talk a little bit size. And
You know, Maplewood is right about the fifth or sixth largest park in Minnesota.
Okay.
It's a large park. It's 9,200 acres.
Oh, wow.
That's not even counting the lake surface acres, but the land.
Land acres.
Yeah, so 9,200 plus acres. About the fifth, sixth largest park in Minnesota. And, you know, we're a new park compared to an Itasca, which was, you know, the earlier parks.
Understood.
So, we're in that realm of the state where we're in the northwestern portion of Minnesota. There's a whole cluster of parks up here, all the way from the Canadian border down toward Lake Carlow State Park and Glacial Lake State Parks on the far south end of our of our, what's called our region.
Yeah.
And Maplewood kind of sits nestled right in the middle here on the edge of the hardwood forest and the western prairies.
Ah, okay. So we have a you mentioned that earlier, like we have the prairies and mm-hmm. the pine, like, can you talk a little bit more yeah. about the Red, it's also part of the Red River Valley, isn't it? With the glacier?
Right. You know, the glacial story is pretty rich here, very rich. You know, the, all of Minnesota's wonderful geological story. The west here, the northwest, you know, the glaciers came through 8,000-10,000 years ago. They pushed through this area, these large, magnificent hills. Many of them are called moraines. Some are called kames, K-A-M-E. Mm-hmm. Those are geological terms that describe the landscape. We have lakes next to some of these high hills that are fairly deep. They were formed by large ice blocks that broke off of glaciers. But glacial stories, we love to tell this to children when they come to the park, because you have to step back in time and envision the park long ago. And mm-hmm. if you stand on the top of Halloway Hill and look to the northwest, can you imagine high glaciers, 3/4 of a mile high, 5, 6, 7, 8 football fields tall? Those were magnificent shields of ice. Mm-hmm. And they came through and they pushed their way into Minnesota, mm. what's now Minnesota. And as they pushed through, they broke off, they moved forward, this ebb and flow of melting ice and this huge weight across the surface of the earth. And it as the glaciers melted, they would unload a lot of that rock and the scraping of the earth's surface mm. as it came. And in Maplewood, for instance, Halloway Hill is a large, high hill that was deposited debris, and by debris, I mean soil, rock, sediment, sand, that were pushed up and unloaded by this movement of this glacier. As it moved forward and receded, it unloaded these large volumes of soils, and that's what has created this magnificent complexity of hills, mm-hmm. these rolling hills. It's called the Alexander Moraine in a larger sense. It runs Park Rapids, Detroit Lakes, all the way down toward Alexandria. Maplewood happens to sit in a real unique series of high hills.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can stand on Halloway and look to the northwest, can you imagine seeing glaciers receding back to the west, looking at Lake Glacial Lake Agassiz, a magnificent body of water that was part of the glacial story here. But even what's amazing are some of these hills are just beautiful vistas. And standing on top of those, you can see for miles. You can mm. see into these maple leaf hills. I call them mountains.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of an exaggeration, of course, because Minnesota really doesn't have mountains per se. But in relative contrast to what's to the west here, the flat mm-hmm. lands of the prairie or the rolling prairies, you know, that's what's unique about Maplewood. We sit on the edge of two biomes, and those biomes are, you know, unique diversities.
What's
of
a biome?
A biome is an ecological or a landscape classification. There are three biomes in Minnesota. There's hardwood forest, there's the conifer forest to the north, there's actually another one called the peatlands, and then to the west are the prairies. But the way of climate and time and the spans of time, different types of biomes have edges, and they're flexible, they move. And in Maplewood, this is where the tension zone, ecological, if you want to call it, tension zone, different types of plants and animals on both of these, they intersect here along through this area of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And Maplewood kind of sits right on the cusp of both of those biomes. So we have a favorite story of mine is I love thrushes. Thrushes are robin-type birds. Robins are a thrush,
mm-hmm.
but they have many cousins. And the most beautiful songbird, in my mind, is the veery thrush. It's a muted brown-colored, looks like a cousin to the robin, but it has the most unbelievable orchestral voice. It is in the bird world, it's one of the most, in my mind, one of the most beautiful lyrical songs in the forest. When I moved to the west here, I was hoping I would still hear them, and I got out on along one of the park edges with the prairie to the west and the hardwood forest to the east. And down in the valley of the hardwood forest, I could hear a thrush calling. I could hear the veery thrush. And off to the right side of the road, I could hear a meadowlark. And now that's a western species. So that's an example of how close those biomes meet. You can literally lean one way and hear a meadowlark yeah. or a bobolink, another western prairie type species. And you can lean a little harder to the east and you can hear a veery thrush or you know, listen to a wetland call of the loon out in the lakes. There's just a diversity that happens in that. You know, there's 150 some bird species that make their way through the park
oh, wow.
every year, live reside or migrate through the park. So that's a lot of migration of birds that come through, and these are neotropical. These are neotropical is the word that describes coming from the south. They spend their winter south in Central America, even to the part of South America, Mexico, and then each year they migrate forward. And this is something that's not new for us to understand, but if you really look close at what's going on with bird migration along these biomes, you'll see a great diversity of bird life. Geese on one side, and on the other side you're going to see these beautiful, colorful songbirds about the size of your thumb. And they migrate hundreds of miles, thousands of miles from southern U.S., Central America, and they migrate and they come through the through our area. You know, Detroit Lakes has a wonderful birding festival, and
yeah,
there's all those components of spring, and we're talking about celebration here. Well, we're welcoming back not only thousands of park visitors, but at the same time that we're getting ready to really have people come back and enjoy the park. We've got birds that are coming through the tops of the trees right now, and they're colorful. They're called yellow-rumped warblers, Nashville warblers, Black Bernie, and they're named usually
after... Where are they going?
They are heading to their nesting grounds.
Oh.
And they're coming through. Some will nest and stay in the park or in our area. They love rich forests. They love woodlands. They need large spaces of you know, intact forest to find contentment and safety, and that's their preference for their nesting sites. So they'll some will stay here, some will keep going north. Some of those little warblers, they weigh the amount of a couple of postage stamps. And this is the miraculous marvel to me, is that they migrate, and they migrate at night. Many of them will migrate in the darkness of night, the cover of night, the cloak of darkness, to find their way north. And many times you can sit on top of Halloway Hill and you'll see warblers trickling through the top treetops. They're feeding in the mornings, but many of them have just tumbled out of the sky to catch a breath, catch their, you know, take a rest stop in our area and enjoy a feast of midges or small insects that they find along the blossoms and the budding of the trees. So
it's interesting. I don't even get to ask questions.
Yeah.
It's an, let's talk a little bit more about details. This is fascinating.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So we know 9,200 acres. Now I would like to ask, first of all, later, I want to ask a couple of things. How many trails? Walkable trails, hiking trails, I mean. Then I think there's horse trails. Then I want to talk a little bit about guests, like day passes, and there's several campsites. I think there's cabins where you can go hiking, but we can also go canoeing and whatnot.
Yeah.
Then I was curious, because you have so much knowledge, like is there guided tours, like all kinds of things. But let's start. We know the size, we know the location. Now, how many, what's about the trail system? How many trail miles do we have? Do you know that, top of your head?
You know, I have a good sense of it. You know, it's a big park. Hiking's a very important part of Maplewood. The variety of trails on these hills and in these prairies. You can go deep valleys, you can go high hills. You can walk through the and listen to the grasses whisper in the wind in the fall. It's a beautiful time to see colorful prairie grasses. You can go up to the top of these vistas and look out forever. You can go down along a lake shore and tread lightly along that shore and listen for frogs or watch loons in the bay. That's the variety of hiking experience. And there's over 25 miles per se of hiking trail in the park. When you combine multiple uses, wintertime, many of those trails become ski trails. There's snowmobile trails in the winter that use a lot of the horse trails we have. You know, we have 20-some miles of horse trails. But the combination of all kinds of uses, we call it about 45 miles of total mileage. But the actual, you know, you could say 25 to 30 miles of actual corridors and variety of trails in the park. Their uses are multiple. Their uses are select in the winter. Some only certain trails are for snowmobilers and the winter lovers that we have. And then there's also as you go through the year, you know, we're really calling and hearkening out to people who want to come and experience Maplewood at their comfort level, where they feel good. And we have an auto tour in the park. You know, a couple parks in the system have auto tours. Itasca has a marvelous, renowned auto trail, 20-some miles. I won't say exactly. I'm not sure how many, but it's a significant mileage. Ours is about a 5-mile gravel road. It's well-maintained, but it takes you through that winding heart of the park. You go through the deep forest, you'll open out into great meadows with butterflies and prairie grasses as tall as we are, and you'll experience the park from an auto tour. So that's a real attraction for those who just want to get out and enjoy beauty from the side of their car. They can pull off and listen to those birds or take a short hike. Fall color, of course, we haven't even touched on that. That's another topic all in its own, and that's a marvelous, wondrous experience, that Maplewood phenomenal experience for folks. So yeah, that's a kind of our trail system. We have a wide variety of trails, complex trails, but we have made some very good improvements with our signing, variety of signs that we have, but our signs really are very they're readable, they're marked well with many intersection points that can refer to a map, lettered systems that people can find themselves and know where they're at, and if they need help, they call, they let us know what lettered sign they're by. We've worked really hard to develop that, because we do have what I call loops, nested loops inside of other loops, and we have a complex trail system that took advantage of earlier roadways that were in the park, and we have lots of lakes and wetlands, so much of our trails take advantage of those places between. If you look at Maplewood from the air, it's a marvel to look at because it's pocketed with lakes, high hills, deep valleys, and most of our development, if you will, those places where people can come and spend time, like our campgrounds. You know, we have multiple campgrounds.
How many campgrounds do
you have? You know, we have about five different kinds of campgrounds. We have what we call the RV, or the main campground with electrical hookup.
Okay.
That's popular, of course, and that's a 32-site campground with a shower building. There's a couple of other kinds of campgrounds. There's one called the Hollow, which takes advantage of the low spot in our landscape, so it's named the Hollow.
Oh.
And a knoll, taking the other direction up on a hill. So we have, those are more tenting, non-electric sites.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Lake Lida Campground for those who want to kind of camp out on the edge of the western edge of the park. You get a glimpse of Lake Lida, and you're up against some of these high glacial moraines we were talking about. Those high hills are in view.
Yeah.
So each of the campgrounds has its own unique character, and a lot of people come. Those that overnight guests, day guests have a treat in themselves, but an overnight guest really experiences the park up close. You see the passing of the day, you see the setting of the sun, you see the sun rising up, you hear the birds at night, you listen to the chorus that wakes you up in the morning, you go out fishing on an early morning. I mean, there's all kinds of things that capture an overnight guest. The advantage to being in overnight is pretty neat, but not always available to everybody. So the day users take full advantage of coming in, spending long days, or even just short hikes.
Yeah.
You can run in the park and hike up Holloway Hill. If it takes me a little longer now, it's a nice, invigorating hike,
I've done
call it. Yeah.
Every year.
It's wonderful. And generations love that hill. And whether they're little hikes with grandpa and grandma in the fall, walking up hand in hand.
It's an easy hike, but it's a beautiful ending when you're up and overlook the lakes.
Yeah, so I mean, a variety of trails, a variety of camping experiences. On the other end of things, we have five camper cabins. These are small log cabins. Our state park system has a whole series of them. Yep, you can rent them and stay overnight. In the winter, we have three winter ones. We have five total, two are seasonal.
Oh, winter ones even?
Yep.
No
and
kidding.
They're very popular. They're one of the most popular camping facilities we can provide in our state parks. Camper cabins have really met a niche over the years.
So I'm curious, how many guests do you host or welcome every year? Like a day, like if it's disclosable, like how many day pass guests, and then how many overnight? Is it like hundreds or is it thousands?
Well, you know, we've had a wonderful, invigorating increase in park visitation, which says probably a lot of things. It says, you know, we serve a lot of people locally that love their home park and their backyard. We serve a lot of returning guests. We have a lot of new people that are coming. Of course, the Fargo-Moorhead area, that metropolis area, they love to come to the park. They're wonderful guests, and we reach out to them. We have the Twin Cities travelers that come. We have cross-country travelers off the interstate. We sure do. And then, of course, all through Minnesota, those who travel to visit particular parks, those folks are kind of networking and making trips to try to get to as many parks as they'd like. But we have about 154,000 visitors a year. That was a record year last year.
a record year last year.
It was
year.
Last year.
Lakes Country is that attractive.
Yeah.
145,000.
Well, 154. I'm not a numbers guy, but it was over 154,000. And it was the first time we've reached that. But there's a lot of reasons for it. People are hungering and thirsting to be connected with nature, whether it's staying overnight or coming in for that day trip. If they're just looking for a place that they can come every weekend, we have a lot of folks that come every weekend to Lakes
really?
Country. Many of these folks
you
are just looking for refreshment.
We have boat launchings and everything, right?
We
you
do. We've got a
couple
some
of boat
launches.
Landings.
Yeah, we haven't talked fishing yet, but
no.
Maplewood's as diverse as.
But one second, I want 150. It's like fascinating. So we have the locals, like we have neighbors. Mm-hmm. Like year-round residents that also embrace, you said it, the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So you have regulars
mm-hmm.
That are residents.
Yes.
Then you have the weekenders. You have mm-hmm. the guests that are nearby from the metro area.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have like serious out-of-state,
mm-hmm.
like real tourists that mm-hmm. made a Explore Minnesota vacation. So how many, mm-hmm. like what's the furthest? I mean, do you meet some people from Japan or from Australia or like?
We do, and what's interesting, what's interesting is the diversity of our clientele continues to expand. We have
really?
Wonderful experiences with people from many places, many countries, whether they're living in, like for instance, in our local communities, we have a very diverse, wonderful population in Pelican Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
If you look up to the Fargo-Moorhead area, there's a wonderful diversity there of people that are coming, and we all come for the same reasons, the beauty of this place. We had a wonderful experience with Nepalese families that had come down over the last few years, and we've gotten to know those families and those visitors, and I asked them what's attractive to them, and they have shared that they love these hills. They love the rolling hills, and it reminds them of foothills in their homeland of Nepal. Of course, we don't have mountains like the Himalayas, but we do have these rugged hills. And the context of just how cosmopolitan the park is in its outreach, and that people from many countries, we can walk through our picnic area on a given Saturday and have wonderful conversations with people from many, many places. And of course, Itasca is a real attraction with the source of the Mississippi. That's a wonderful attraction. But each Minnesota State Park, getting back to that big picture, has its own unique story, its own niche of natural, cultural, recreational features that attracts people from many places. And our parks are really growing. And people's hunger and thirst for connections to nature never ends. It's a real privilege to be able to welcome people to engage
right
in that.
It. Yeah. Before we talk maybe a little bit fishing, and I also want to touch on how challenging or how much work it is to maintain a park like that. And by maintain, I don't mean mow the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean like manage it. And so we heard there's 150 birds go through a species.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what other. And I'm not referring to insects, but like what other, I guess we have, obviously we have deer, but is there like bear or like fox? Like can you name a handful of, skunk? Like what is it all? Like everything?
Yeah. A wide variety. We have many mammal species from the smaller rodents and mice species that are part of our prairies and part of our woodlands, all the way up to deer. We have bear,
we
occasional
have bear.
Bear are in Otter Tail County for sure. And we'll have a handful, maybe two or three sightings by park guests every year. And
like small black bears then?
Small black bears, black bears. So we have bears, we have badgers, we have fox, many of the water mammals, the otters, of course, Otter Tail County, wonderful otter populations. They're a unique animal. Mink and muskrat, beaver, of course, are with all the waterways in Otter Tail County. We have plenty of beaver, and they're marvelous.
Like the regular residents,
yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And amphibians, we've got spring peepers. There was a first frog I saw here the other day.
Oh, yeah?
And butterflies are already flying up on Halloway Hill.
We got
winter butterflies that, many folks don't realize, but butterflies winter. There's a few species that spend the winter as an adult. And on a warm February day or early spring day like last weekend, they come out and they fly. They tuck themselves into the crevice of a rock or into a niche in a tree, and they'll come out and fly over the snow, and then they'll tuck back in if it's warm enough. But they were already out, some of the overwintering butterflies.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. All that little detail, you know, along with the big picture things of what you see with the beauty that you see with your eyes. And, you know, it's interesting, the concept of beauty, the wonder of beauty, how we perceive that, how we all are connected that way, because we all have this sense of, you know, of wonder with the natural world.
And what do you want to mention about fishing?
Oh, fishing, you know, the diversity of the park, on the edge of the biomes, all of those things. We also have a diverse fishery opportunity in the park. You know,
how many lakes?
There are about 8 what we call major lakes, you could say. But we have, you know, great walleye fisheries. We have a unique rainbow trout lake in the park. It's a stocked lake that offers rainbow trout fishing.
Oh.
We have a muskie lake called Beers Lake.
Oh.
But renowned lakes in all of Otter Tail County for panfish, you know, crappies, sunfish. Lake Light is a great walleye lake. There's a great diversity of fishing opportunity within the park's boundaries. And, of course, that's just nestled in with, I think you mentioned it in your publications, 1,040-some lakes in Otter Tail County. That's a marvelous story in itself.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's a really a lot of... I want to go out for a hike, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
So how many staff members do you have, or like how do you manage a park like that?
Yeah, we have wonderful staff. They're experienced. We have many seasonal staff. We have about 10 employees. 8 of them are seasonal staff, so they are faithful, committed public servants that come. They love the park. They have great passions for the park. They come year after year to seasonal jobs, and they do a wonderful job. Mm-hmm. They're experts in the park, whether they're parks workers or building and grounds workers. Their blood, sweat, and tears have really helped maintain this park. And we have a long heritage of wonderful park staff and managers that have led the way in the story, just a unique employee story at Maplewood.
But only 10? And there's
about
10 year-round?
Yeah.
That's not a lot of employees.
We like to think we're efficient and that we run, you know, what we have done, and this is kind of another offshoot of topic, but partnerships with the community. We have a renowned and a very treasured and valued partnership with a group called the Friends of Maplewood.
Yeah,
you know,
I've heard of them.
They're a wonderful group that supports park activities, park events. They lavish us with volunteer help to do some of the great outreach that happens in the fall. We have leaf days. That's a long-standing tradition, and the Friends of Maplewood have been a very creative, resilient group that has supported that whole leaf day celebration. It's magnificent. Couple weekends, last weekend in September, first weekend in October, and it's a marvelous celebration here. They also are instrumental in the maple syruping story, which has just evolved over the last 8 to 10 years.
I think we just opened a maple syrup station, like a demonstration house.
Yeah,
or something?
It's a sugar house or a sugar shack, beloved sugar shack.
Can you say some words about that?
Well, that grand opening was last fall, a beautiful September, mid-September. We had fall color in the background, and we had the dreams of sap tapping trees in our minds for the spring. And I think the bigger part of it is the Friends have taken a tremendous amount of interest, support, and inspiration to move that project into its early years of, you know, just beginning to start smaller programs in a variety of methods, earlier pioneer methods of making maple syrup. And now it's evolved over the years to help meet the needs. Kind of the unique story with the Maple Sugar Shack at Maplewood Park is local commercial maple syrup producers had some requests from the public to do a variety of interpretive stories to tell that, but many times they may not have the capacities to have the public come into their facilities. Mm-hmm. So these folks had a great inspiration. They thought, well, let's work and work together with the park staff and the park managers prior to my coming to Maplewood, and started planting the seed of doing something at the park on maple syrup production. And that evolved into this really quite a grand partnership effort where we worked hand in hand with the Friends group many generous volunteers, generous donors, and then working with the state to design a sugar shack that could house, you know, a nice first-class evaporator. And now with this year, this past spring was our first year with the house fully operational, and we expanded producing. Our offerings, producing maple syrup, and we and our greatest joy is to, you know, listen to children singing in the woods, tapping trees, collecting sap, listening to the stories of how maple syrup is made. And it comes from the voices of our volunteers. And those voices tell the stories, all the subtle nuanced details of how to make maple syrup. But that we're just getting over that. We're catching our breath after a really vigorous spring of maple syruping in the park.
So that's a seasonal farming and production cycle, I would say. Mm-hmm. So, but is it year-round? Is it like a museum during the year? Is it accessible to get some
it's
information?
It's accessible from, you know, what's interesting is it's such a new development for the park that we are now embracing the opportunity to tell the story more fully with interpretive panels, you know, signage outside the building, or that will provide year-round stories about how maple syrup is made. So the building is there. We just came through close to 5 or 6 weeks of pretty intensive
production
on and off again maple syrup programming for schools. We had about six schools that came to the park.
Oh, wow.
Many children learned about from the area. Friends made a great outreach to the local schools, and we expanded this year. We have a demonstration day in usually early April, and that is well attended, and kind of the crowning weekend, the crowning glory of all of our maple syrup efforts comes into culmination with the demonstration day, and we had, you know, 500 some folks there this year, but it's a wonderful time, and we had a very great support system through the Friends of Maplewood over the years to bring this.
How many events besides a visit, like we just heard of the fall,
fall
leaf
days
is one event, and now we have the demonstration, maple syrup demonstration. Is there other annual events or celebrations?
There is, you know.
Fests?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we really celebrate all the seasons here.
I know, but like, do we have something where there's a barbecue?
Yeah.
Or like, I remember the fall days, there's like a kids can paint, and there's little stations where they can build something.
Yeah.
But is there like organized fests?
It's primarily the Leaf Day event.
Okay.
There's some, where the Friends of Maplewood have a great idea to incorporate some music concerts during the summer months.
Okay.
We also have a wonderful candlelight ski and
chili that's another
theme.
Event.
That's the winter. So we are kind of touching all the seasons, but much of this would not be possible without, you know, excellent staff.
Sure.
To take care of our guests as they start coming in. Our staff just got into the saddle, I call it, in the last couple of weeks. They got back on their seasonal staff, so they're just getting up and running here. We got trails that we checked this week. We're getting plumbing systems. Water systems are our next big challenge, and on a late year like this with deep frost, those are our big challenges operationally, but we have seasoned staff that will help us through that. But much of our programming is done through volunteers and through the Friends
of Maplewood. What's about a marathon? Maplewood Marathon.
Yeah, we have a run in the early spring.
Oh, you have a run?
We do have a fun run.
5K or
it's
is it just a fun run?
It's called the Fun Run. It's a organization out of Fergus Falls, Human Health Resources Center.
How many participants and how long?
We've had from 250 to 400 plus runners. We've had it for, I think this is our eighth year. It's a great partnership. This is one of those neat partnerships.
Yeah.
That,
so there's another event. So we have quite a number of events.
Yeah, and so we run, those folks run the hills of Maplewood every spring. It's usually second week in June. And you can come and run through these hills. It's a competitive run, but there's also fun runs for kids and activities. But they're a wonderful group that have a super organization with a lot of volunteers that make that work well hand in hand with the park.
Okay, very interesting. Well, I think we learned a lot here. Some details. What did we forget? Do you want to share anything else? Like some things that I didn't ask, like a I don't know, I asked about size, history. We know the lakes, eight lakes, 9,200 acres. I heard like 40 some miles of trail system. We have cabins, we have overnight tent facilities. We have some events. Mm-hmm. I think we covered a lot of territory.
I'm catching my breath.
Yeah.
but I will say, you know, we're always about connecting people to nature and outdoors.
Yeah.
And creating and inspiring, you know, future generations to have that tradition passed on.
Yeah.
Because that's a wonder of Minnesota. We have a great stewardship ethic. We love our parks. We love our woods, our forests, our prairies, our water. Yeah. All of these are precious resources. So
absolutely.
We get the privilege of helping maintain that and preserve that.
It.
We can't grow a prairie, but we do restore prairies in our parks. That's another story for perhaps another day.
Yeah.
The prairie restoration story, and that's a wonderful, colorful story. But, you know, connecting people, because outdoor recreation is a big part of who we are in Minnesota, but not everybody has that experience in their experience or
when they're growing up.
So, you know, Minnesota State Parks, we offer what's called an I Can Camp series, an I Can Paddle, which of course is about learning how to use canoes and paddle in water, I Can Fish, and I Can Mountain Bike. And these are programs for beginners that's offered to Minnesota State Parks. If you go to our website, you can find out about where these different programs are. But, you know, that is a wonderful way, and you can come with no experience. You don't have to have experience. You don't come with equipment.
Sure.
You just come. Everything's provided. And you can learn some of those outdoor skills or outdoor activities.
And these are all listed on your website?
They're going to be on the Minnesota DNR. If you type in Minnesota DNR and go to Parks and Trails, you're going to get to a page just loaded with information.
Okay.
So that's an outreach that we do year to year.
Okay, I want to communicate that a little bit more and research that and put that on our weekend website. Well, fantastic. Thank you very much. I'm excited to watch the spring and the gloom and the prospering and then the summer, and I'll visit you many times this season, I hope.
We'll look forward to that.
Yeah, thank you for coming out. Have a wonderful weekend.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com, and if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com, and you have a wonderful weekend ahead.